Episode number 5 of the MVP is brought to you by all the website and hosting savings available at scottsigler.com/GoDaddy. GoDaddy is the place to go for web hosting, full blogging solutions, online shopping carts, and e-commerce for snagging that domain for your business or locking up the URLs of your children's names. GoDaddy has secure email, guaranteed uptime for your website, and there is an actual person there to help you 24/7. ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy has savings codes like Scott Deal, which gets you 10% off any order, Scott Host, which saves you 20% off of 1, 2, or 3-year hosting plans, and the code Scott459, which gets you a brand new domain for just $4.95, good until December 7th, 2012. Check out ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy and send that link to everyone you know who needs a website. And now, on with our story. Welcome to The MVP, Book 4 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The MVP is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with Book 1, The Rookie, Book 2, The Starter, and Book 3, The All-Pro, is available as a full-length, unabridged digital audiobook download as an ebook for Kindle, Nook, iPad, iPhone, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback. The MVP is also available as a signed, numbered, limited-run collector's edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Hello, junkies, and especially all of you junkies who happen to be veterans, or married to a veteran, or the parents and or child of a veteran, but primarily veterans of our armed forces. Today, when this episode runs, it is Veterans Day. In the words of a very famous movie, the lines went, "I would rather you just said thank you and went on about your day." Well, thank you, and now I will go on about my day. The Detective ebook is out, but there's been a delay getting it into the iTunes store and non-Amazon, non-ScottSigler.com outlets, which means if you want it, this GFL novella written by myself and Matt Wallace, you can get that at Amazon.com for your Kindle or at ScottSigler.com/store. But as for iBooks and iTunes and the Nook Store and other stores, it's in there. Just give it a moment. The other thing, of course, that is out, the MVP audiobook is out. This story you're listening to now, you can get the whole dang thing at scottsigler.com/store. After this episode, we will have 12 new junkie shoutouts and a promo from forumgames.com, a place to share your love of games with its founder, Eric. He's a fellow junkie. He's just like you people. He's a junkie. He also likes games. And he has a forum, forumgames.com. So we'll run that promo. And yes, as it was mentioned in the open to this show, there is a brand new GoDaddy.com coupon code, Scott495, which will get you a brand new domain for just $4.95. Now, if you use this, what I suggest you do is they default you to 2 years. You should grab it for 3 or 4, because at $5 a pop, you can lock up that domain that you've been thinking of, or that domain you need for your small business, your art studio, your sole proprietorship, etc. For like $20, you can lock it up for 4 years, completely beat all of the price increases that are going to be knocking down our door in years to come. So that is Scott, S-C-O-T-T, 495. That is good till December 7th, 2012. If by the time you hear this, it's already past December 7th, 2012, just go to scottsigler.com/GoDaddy. Tons of coupon codes there for you. In episode 4, we left our heroes in yet another cliffhanger. It's been cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger after episode 1 in this whole MVP story. So what we're going to do is I'm going to roll into a story so far, a rarely seen story so far. Then we will bust directly in to the MVP episode number 5. In the last episode, Quentin and his friends defeated their Prowat captors in The Game, a brutal contest in which both a Prowat and an Ioneth Kraken died. Victory on the pitch was supposed to guarantee the release of the touchback, the Kraken's team bus, but shortly after the win, the ship started to fill with knockout gas. Quentin watched his teammates falling unconscious all around him. Finally, he, too, succumbed to the gas. The Prowat had lied. The episode ended with Quentin passing out, not knowing what might happen next. And now, episode 5 of The MVP. Quentin knew he had an enormous tolerance for physical pain. What he did not have, however, was an enormous tolerance for alcohol. In his PNFL days, he'd loved his beer, but not for the taste or the buzz. Beer offended his holier-than-thou teammates and the ever-so-pious members of the church, and he enjoyed offending those people. He would make a single can last for hours. Despite being 7 feet tall and weighing almost 400 pounds, he had discovered early on that 2 beers made him falling down drunk, and 3 beers were a recipe for disaster. In his second year with the McCovey Raiders, he'd earned the starting quarterback position at just 17 years old. To celebrate his first win, some of the other players had taken him out in the town. 5 beers and a few hours of sleep later, he'd awoken to the first hangover of his life. An entire day of vomiting, his body aching like he'd been beaten up in the octagon, and a head that felt like it was filled with rotting round bugs were enough to tell him that he would always be an amateur drinker. The professional ranks were not for him. If he could go back in time, grab that hangover, put it in a magic amplifier where it grew to 10 times its original strength, then cram it back into his head with a power siphon, it would approximate how he felt now. He tried to sit up, tried to lift a head so heavy it had to be made of granite. Around him, he heard the moans and groans of other human and heavy G players. His eyelids fluttered open to see dozens of blinking eye stalks only inches from his face.
The goblin Quentin Barnes lives! He lives!
The Sklorno had packed in around him, Milford front and center. Her raspers dangled on his chest, her drool wetted his orange jersey.
Quentin Barnes, are you alive? Are you?
It hurt to blink. Seriously, it hurt to even blink. Ugh. I think so. He tried to push himself to a sitting position. He was on some kind of a metal grate. A matching metal grate was only a few feet above him. Sklerno tentacles grabbed him and pulled him up. He knew they were only trying to help, but they moved him so fast it seemed to slosh the blood around inside his abused brain.
Girls, give me some room, will ya?
The Sklerno backed away. Quentin looked around. He was in the shuttle bay. But it looked so different. Racks of sentient-sized mesh shelves filled the room like a forest of stunted black trees. 3 shelves to each rack, like the triple bunk beds he'd slept on in the miners' dorms back on McCovey. He was on the bottom bunk. The black, gnarled material seemed to be the same stuff that made up the Prawat Arena and, probably, the Prawat ships themselves. He looked to the shuttle bay doors, which were open but only about 18 inches. The strange material had filled that open space like a waterfall of black ice. Tendrils spread across the floor, black creepers that sprouted up to form the triple-decker bunk beds. Milford leaned in again, shaking with concern.
Quentin Barnes, your arms!
No wonder she was upset. A cluster of organic-looking black cables was sticking out of the crook of his elbow. Not just sticking out, they were under his skin, snaking down his forearm and up into his shoulder. He grabbed at them in a sudden panic, yanking hard to tear them from his body. As soon as he pulled, the black material disintegrated into puffs of dust and hard pebbles that scattered across his bunk and down to the deck below. What should have been an inch-wide hole in his arm instantly closed up, leaving only a few drops of blood to show that the cables had been there at all. Quentin heard a voice from the bunk above him.
Oh, man, John Tweedy said. They ain't paying us enough for this.
Up on the top bunk, Jew Tweedy's tired face looked over to stare down at his brother.
Not enough to wake up to your face, John.
John looked up at him.
What? Was that a joke?
Oh, how I wish it were.
John struggled to climb up to the top bunk, but Quentin grabbed the man's wrist.
Guys, knock it off, Quentin said. We need to figure out what's going on.
He slid out of the rack and felt the cold deck against his bare feet. He tried to stand, but his knees wobbled. 12 tentacles grabbed him as Milford, Haywick, Wahiwa, Davenport, Sheboygan, and Mezquitic all reached to support him at the same time.
Leave me be, he said.
pushing their tentacles away. I don't need your help. The Scalerno backed away from him, bobbing and bowing in apology. John slid out of the bed above and stood on Quentin's left. He pushed his right index finger against the side of his nose, then blew, sending a glob of snot to the deck. He did the same on his left side.
John, Quentin said, can't you see I'm barefoot?
John looked down.
Do you want me to fetch your slippers for you?
Juice slid off the top bunk, a fall of some 10 feet down to the deck below. He landed lightly with an athletic grace that seemed somehow spooky for a man of his size and thickness. All around the landing bay, humans and Heavy G crawled out of the bunks that hadn't existed the day before. Quentin saw Yasood. Sood's normally braided beard was a foot-long poof of coarse black hair. Rick Warburg was on his knees, vomiting on the deck. Off to the right, Michael Kimberlin tried to stand, but his legs gave out. He caught himself by putting his fists against the ground, making him look like a sleepless, furless gorilla. Tara the Freak wobbled around on unsure legs. Virak the Mean started to roll out of his second deck bunk, then seemed to give up, roll back in, and go to sleep. The whole team looked stinking drunk, except for the Sklorno, however, who were already fully recovered from whatever had happened. The ones that weren't watching Quentin's every move seemed to be playing some kind of racing game that used the tall bunk beds as hurdles. Sklorno, Human, Heavy G, Quith Warrior, there was one race missing.
Hey, Quentin said, where's all the key?
A hard elbow in his ribs. Quentin winced, already knowing that was John's excited way of answering the question. The eldest Tweety brother pointed toward the orange and black shuttle that ferried players to and from the league's many stadiums. Just past the shuttle, Quentin saw the key, all 13 of them, held aloft by a black mesh net dangling some 15 feet above the deck. A black cable ran from the net to the dome ceiling above. That cable branched into smaller cables that covered the key's hexagonal mouths. Another hard elbow in his ribs.
Cue, John said. They dead?
Doubt it, Quentin said.
We're alive, aren't we?
John thought, then nodded.
We are. Probably.
He crossed his arms and looked up at the ceiling. His eyes narrowed and thought.
Hard to be sure, though. We could be dead. No, we have to be alive, because if this was the afterlife, then we'd be on a football field for sure.
Quentin smiled. If only that were true, he would have never strayed from the purest faith. John rubbed at his temples.
Man, I feel like we went on an all-night bender through every party sub on Isis. Did the Prawat gas us?
The Prawat. Memories of the game flooded back, as did memories of Stockbridge's death. Quentin looked at the spot where Doc Batah had set up the triage area, but nothing was there. No tables, equipment, no marks on the floor. Just how long had they been out?
Uncle Johnny, find Doc Batah, Quentin said. Wake him up. Gently, understand, and bring him here.
John nodded and ran off. Quentin turned to John's brother.
Jew, go help Tara the Freak.
Quentin pointed to Tara, who was still stumbling a bit.
Make sure he's okay, then have him climb up to that cable and see if he can cut the key loose.
Jew stood tall and snapped off a smart salute.
Private Jew Tweety, reporting for duty and such.
He jogged over to Tara. Quentin looked up to the ceiling.
Computer?
There was no answer.
Captain Cheevers, please come in.
Again, no answer. Milford and the other Sklorno were still close by, as if waiting for a command from their holy teammate.
Milford, Haywick, go to the bridge. If Captain Kate and the crew are still asleep, wake them up. Have them get ship communications working right away. Milford, ask her if she has any information for me, then come right back. Haywick, you stay there and be a runner for her until the computer's back online, in case she needs to send any messages.
The two receivers didn't answer. Instead, they turned and sprinted top speed to the open interior airlock. They banked right in order to leap over one of the bunk beds, then angled through the door. Quentin hoped they understood what he was asking of them. He turned to the other Sklorno.
Wahiwa, Davenport, Sheboygan, Mezquitic, you guys split up, go through the ship. Tell everyone to come to the shuttle bay. Go.
The four of them sprinted for the interior airlock. On a football field, the top speed of a Sklorna was something to behold. In the smaller confines of a spaceship, they looked like they might splatter themselves into a wall at any second. Quentin felt a presence on his left. He turned to look into the single, baseball-sized eye of Chodo the Bright.
Shamakath,
Chodo said quietly.
Are you all right?
The Quith warrior looked horrible. The normally clear cornea of that single eye swirled with a mixture of black, dark red, and pink. The black of anger, the dark red of hatred, probably against the Prawat who had done this and, therefore, put Quentin in danger, and the pink of fear for Quentin's health. Last season, Chodo had sworn his allegiance to Quentin as his Shamakath, his one and only leader. Quentin leaned in and whispered, Don't use that word, remember?
I do,
Chodo said.
My apologies.
Quentin leaned back. And I'm fine. My head's killing me, but I'm okay. You? The pink faded from Chodo's eye, but the black and the dark red swirls remained.
I feel like my internal organs are decomposing inside,
he said.
No, allow me to clarify. It feels like I am full of the decomposing feces of a 10-kiloton farnier bird. They are carrion eaters and already full of decomposing material themselves, you see.
That made Quentin laugh, which brought on another wave of head pain. He rubbed his eyes and took a breath, waiting for it to pass. A 10-kiloton equivalent of a buzzard? He'd have to see one of those someday. At any rate, the Quith weren't known for exaggeration, which meant Chodo felt something awful. Wake up the other warriors, Quentin said, especially Vyrak. Chodo glanced over to Vyrak the Mean, who was still sleeping in his bunk.
Do not think Vyrak is your ally,
Chodo said. Quentin nodded.
I know who he serves.
Vyrak's loyalties remained with Greedock the Splithead. Greedock had played games with Quentin's heart and soul, had created a fake father to sway Quentin's decisions. Someday, perhaps someday soon, the crime lord would pay for his actions. When that happened, Vyrak would become a dangerous enemy.
He's not my ally, but he's still my teammate, and he knows how to fight. We may need that soon.
Quentin thumped Chodo on the shoulder. The hulking Quith warrior jogged off to gather up the rest of his kind. John came running through the black bunks. He was laughing, holding a semi-conscious Doc Bata on an upturned left hand like a waitress carrying a large platter. Doc's wing flaps hung mostly limp but fluttered lightly from the air passing over them.
He's like a kite, Q!
John stopped in front of Quentin. He tossed Doc Bata into the air. Like a balloon, the naturally buoyant Hurrah floated up, then gently down. John laughed and pumped his right fist as if he just sacked a quarterback.
Q, this is awesome! We could tie a string to him and see how high he goes!
Quentin gently reached up and put one hand on the Hurrah's underside, one hand on top of the flat, boxy backpack that all Hurrah wore. He held Doc in place.
John, he's not a toy.
If it looks like a toy and flies like a toy, flashed across John's face. John frowned.
Sometimes, Q. Sometimes. You're no fun.
We're in the middle of an alien spaceship. Everyone has been gassed. We've been out for who knows how long, and they could execute us at any moment. Does that sound like a time to have fun?
John shrugged. If we're gonna die, what better time is there to have fun? You be sad about it if you want, but some of us know which side of our bread is covered in eggs.
John walked off, whistling a tune. Doc Bata's backpack speakerphone let out a burst of static, then he spoke.
Thank you, young Quentin. I was afraid John was going to see how far he could throw me.
John would never do something like that, Quentin said, knowing full well that John would do exactly something like that. Y'all right, Doc? Doc Bata's shape changed slightly as he became just a bit thicker, then he floated out of Quentin's hands. His wing flaps undulated slowly.
I will be fine,
he said.
Although, I haven't felt this bad since my younger days when my tribe mates and I would intentionally ingest a diluted poison made from the rotted puree of a cluster fruit found on the planet of Shora.
Quentin tried to imagine what kind of an insane culture would drink poison, diluted or not. Maybe humans were just smarter than the other races when it came to some things.
Everyone feels like crap, Quentin said.
The symptoms are consistent with being kept unconscious for an extended period of time,
Doc Bata said.
A very long time.
How long was a very long time? Quentin had no idea if or when they might find out. And what was the point of drugging everyone?
Doc,
Do you think they're going to try and kill us? Doc Batas' speaker film let out his well-known sigh of annoyance.
Try to kill us, young Quentin? Building beds and life support systems doesn't seem like a very efficient way to murder a sentient now, does it? No, they are not trying to kill us. Not now, at least. However, they could be taking us to a specific location for execution, as is common in ritualistic murders.
Thanks, Quentin said. That makes me feel so much better.
You're welcome. I live to serve.
The interior airlock doors opened. Wahiawa, Davenport, Sheboygan, and Mezquitic all ran in, carrying orange-uniformed Ionath staff. A human, Masal the Efficient, and another worker Quentin didn't recognize. The Sklorno gently set the staffers on the deck, then sprinted out, presumably to find more sentients to rescue. Quentin waved Masal over. The workers stumbled forward as a few more staffers entered under their own power. Masal looked rumpled. Quentin had never seen the worker when his uniform wasn't immaculate and neatly creased. Masal's big cornea had a hazy film over it. His sparse fur stuck out in all directions.
Elder Barnes, Masal said, I do not feel well.
Welcome to the party, pal, Quentin said. Masal, I need you to make a list of every sentient on this ship. If anyone isn't in the shuttle bay, I need to know where they are and what condition they're in. I want everyone accounted for.
Yes, Elder Barnes.
The worker walked away, straightening his uniform with one pedipalp hand and activating his palm-up display with the other.
Young Quentin, excuse me,
Doc Batas said.
I must check on the sentients in the med bay. Then I will examine everyone on board for any long-term effects.
Quentin pointed at the big dangling bag of key. What about the... Before he could finish his sentence, the cable holding the bag disintegrated into a cloud of black dust. The cluster of key fell 15 feet, landing so hard Quentin felt the vibration. The now conscious key tumbled away from each other, big legs and arms waving in uncoordinated motions. Up in the shallow dome's rigging, Tara the Freak hung from one long pedipalp arm. His free hand waved at Quentin.
Nicely done,
Doc Batas said.
Your key teammates will be fine. They can process far more poisons than can either of our species. As I look around, no one seems hurt. That tells me the Prawat knew what they were doing. I will let you know the status of Coach Hokor.
With that, the Hurrah's gray wings undulated, carrying him across the landing bay to the internal airlock doors. As he floated out, Captain Kate Cheevers walked in. She saw Quentin and made a beeline for him.
Barnes, any idea what's going on?
Quentin shook his head.
Just that they gassed us after the game. We were all here in the landing bay, then everyone started dropping.
Cheevers nodded.
Yeah, same thing up on the bridge. We watched the game. I watched you especially.
She winked at him, her head twitching to the right at the same time.
You look good out there, pretty boy. Real good.
Was she really hitting on him now? Why did no one seem to understand how serious this was?
Thanks, he said.
Any idea how long we were out? She shook her head.
Computers shut down all over the ship, including the bridge. All systems are off, and that black stuff blocks all our viewports, so we can't even take a star reading to see where we're at.
She looked around, saw the Sklorno bringing sentience in. She nodded, looked up at him.
You did a good job so far of getting everyone together, and I appreciate that. But that stunt you pulled up on the bridge when the Prawat boarded us? You better remember that this is my ship. I am the captain. What I say goes. You got it?
Quentin stared down at her. He remembered how she'd looked when Bumberpuff and the other Prawat had entered the bridge. She had looked defeated. Captain Kate had quit. And in this galaxy, there was no place for quitters. Right now, however, wasn't the time to worry about that.
I got it, he said.
Kate nodded, wink twitch. She walked back to the internal airlock, obviously heading for the bridge. Quentin would let her run things unless her decisions put the team at risk, or did anything that threatened to delay their return. If he had to take over, he would. He had seen Kate's true colors. He saw teammates coming his way. Don Pine and the bleach-white-skinned Yitzhak Goldman, his backup quarterbacks, a still-wobbly Michael Kimberlin, Chota the Bright, and Virak the Mean. Virak's eye was flooded a deep black.
What has been done to us?
He said.
Where can I find the ones responsible?
Quentin shrugged.
I don't know yet. Our first priority is to make sure everyone's okay.
Our first priority is to make sure Greedock's property is in good health,
Virax said. He pointed to the 20-odd civilian staffers that had gathered in the shuttle bay.
They are easily replaced. Players are not.
Wrong, Quentin said, a bit more forcefully than he'd intended. We make sure everyone is okay. Just because those sentients don't play in the field doesn't make them less important than we are. And we're not property, Virax. We are individuals, and we all matter. Virax's pedipalps twitched. He was laughing at Quentin. Kimberlin rubbed his eyes, then looked around the shuttle bay.
At least everyone is still alive, even the Sklorno, he said. That is more than I would have hoped for. You have done well, Quentin.
Yitzhak clapped Quentin on the shoulder.
You beat the Crawlies, he said. But they said they'd let us go. What do they want with us?
That was the million-credit question, and Quentin still had no idea.
I don't know the answer to that. Let's get everyone together and figure out our next step.
Don pointed to the internal airlock.
Well, 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 look what the dog dragged in.
Doc Patah floated through the door, followed by a stumbling Coach Hokor the Hookchest. He had a bandage wrapped around his tiny, yellow-furred head, and a little Kraken's baseball cap pulled down on top of that. Masal the Efficient appeared at Quentin's side.
Elder Barnes, all personnel are accounted for. Captain Cheevers and her command crew are on the bridge. All players, staff, and other crew are here, as you requested.
Then came a sound like dirt pouring from a high shovel to scatter across the floor. The bunk beds started to collapse, sagging like sandcastles caught in a sudden rain. The material puddled on the shuttle bay deck, then flowed backward toward the big exterior airlock doors. The same material that blocked those doors melted away, revealing a reddish light beyond. A pair of massive, gnarled, very unhuman black hands slid inside the landing bay, one gripping the left-hand door, the other gripping the right. Each hand was the size of Mumo Killowee. The door machinery groaned. Vibrations rumbled through the deck. The big hands slowly slid the doors open. Don Pine nodded in mock appreciation.
Oh, joy, he said. Well, looks like we'll finally get some answers.
The doors were now a good 15 feet apart. The red light shone in from beyond. The black hands slid away. Wherever they were, the wait was over.
Virax, Quentin said. Get us ready to fight.
Quentin saw Virax's eye briefly flood orange, the color of happiness. Then the scarred, heavily enameled combat veteran began screaming orders that even a non-soldier would follow without thought.
Oh, geez, he's gone and done it again. That's another effing cliffhanger. I didn't write it to be cliffhanger-y. It's just, you write things to carry your reader through the book. It just so happens the way that Steve Rickyberg broke this down, he's the guy who edited this book, the way he broke it down, he just so happens to end every episode on an effing cliffhanger. So, I blame Steve Rickyberg because I, of course, have not done anything wrong, except for that one time back in 1974 where I said I had made a mistake, but that was incorrect. It was originally correct to start with, which therefore invalidated the concept that I had made a mistake, which means I have never, ever, ever, ever been wrong. Once again, a big, fat, giant, wet, sloppy, kissy thank you to the veterans of our armed services and all of my foreign, non-American listeners. Thank you for being patient long enough for me to get through this. I do appreciate it. I know it's not your armed services, but it's our armed services, our armed forces. And we got to say thank you for that. So veterans, thank you so much, A Real Girl and I. That is, of course, A Kovacs. We are extremely grateful for all of you, all that you have done, all the sacrifices that you made, the sacrifices that your families made. We also appreciate our many veterans who help us directly with these stories. All you guys, and you know who you are, thank you for your help in making Contagious better, making Ancestor better, and making Pandemic better. Yes, that's right. Pandemic, working on it right now. It's going to be in bookstores fall of 2013. If there are any bookstores left, which I cannot guarantee at this time, I have 12 new junkie shoutouts for you. These are people who signed up with profiles
over at scottsigler.com, which makes them buttery. That's the word. That is the word for you people who have signed up with the profile. You are buttery, and that's a good thing. Everybody likes butter. Butter, except for the lactose intolerant people. But then you have, I can't believe it's not buttery. So it all kinds of works out. If you haven't signed up with a profile at scottsigler.com, do that. You might wind up in a story. You can talk about the episodes with other junkies. You can get involved in the forums. You can interact with me. And who doesn't want to interact with me? Even I love interacting with me. Not that I love myself. It's not like that. It's just factual. It's science. People who have signed up, you could be like these cats from Great Britain, Most Jeff, and Tej from India, Raviz9, and my countrymen and countrywomen from the United States of America, Dr. Forkbeard, Jessuk, Bubba Haney, Kona to Hula, TSGB, Jay Saleh, Soviet Commander, Hertz Winnip, and Zamion. That list was prepared by my business partner and best buddy, A. Kovacs. Her favorite two new junkie names are, let's see, Kona to Hula and Bubba Haney, because they were both super cool when we met them in Las Vegas. Plus, this is from A, Kona to Hula has a cupcake tattoo. You know, also, I believe I remember my cousin, the Francis Dominic Olivieri, the FDO, the other FDO. I believe him, he was talking about that bowling night that I was sick. I was up in my room. This is at Sigler Fest. I was in my room. I'd had some bad lettuce and it hadn't gone well. So he filled in for me to go bowling, and he did an interview with a girl's cupcake tattoo on video. And I believe that video will be posted to the feed sometime in the future. As soon as I can get Francis to give that up so that I can get that video, I will share it with all of you guys. So, of course, the question you're all asking, the reason you're still listening, is because of the amazing prize closet of Siglerism. And you're sitting there saying to yourself, self, what do Kona to Hula and Bubba Haney win? Well, I'm going to tell you what they won. Today's prize, extra special. Extra special because it shows the evils of capitalism and an unregulated market. Keebler, that's right, Keebler, the people who make the cookies, guess who they ripped off? They ripped off the Girl Scouts of America. And they have ripped off whatever that, okay, I don't know what it's called, but when the Girl Scouts come around, you got that round cookie with the fudge stripes over the caramely coconut action with a cookie inside. Yeah, they ripped that off with a cookie that they call Coconut Dreams. It looks just like them, but when you bite into it, what you get in essence is the taste of what happens when an elf takes advantage of a Girl Scout. And it's not a pleasant taste, ladies and gentlemen. It's not pleasant at all. It looks good. It looks like one of those Girl Scout cookies. But when you eat it, not so good. So, I would like to let you know, Kona to Hula and Bubba Haney, that you each are going to, you're going to have to split this. Usually we only have one winner of the new junkie name of the week. You get to split this Coconut Dream. I'm going to split it right now. Ready? Oh, it didn't even make any noise. It tastes like, it's in my mouth, it tastes like, let's see, if you took an elf, you took an elf and you put them in a meat grinder, like the pigs in that one Saw movie, and then you took a Girl Scout, dropped her in acid, and you take those two things and you put them together on top of a cookie and sprinkle coconut over it. That's what the Coconut Dream tastes like. Everyone, stay away from the Keebler Coconut Dreams. They look like a Girl Scout cookie, but they're not. They're not at all. Stay away. Stay away. I will be back next Sunday with episode number 6 of the MVP and see if I can cliffhanger you again. We're going to finish up with that promo for forumgames.com, but first, if you haven't been keeping up over at scottsigler.com, you should, because last week we ran a guest goods for Ruth Carter, who is a lawyer who is an expert on flash mobs and blogging law. You should go over to scottsigler.com, check that out. If you're not subscribed to the feed and get these episodes automatically into iTunes or into your podcatcher, or your RSS client, you can do that if you just subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/Scott Sigler or go to scottsigler.com and over in the right-hand side up near the top, you will see a little iTunes icon. If you click on that iTunes icon, every audio and video episode I drop will automatically show up in your iTunes, and it's really just the easiest way to get everything. So I mentioned Ruth because if you blog, if you do anything like that, if you have a vidcast, if you have a podcast, there's legal issues. What can and can't you blog? Can your blogging get you fired? Can your blogging get you killed? No, I'm not kidding. That's the title of her book. But swing over to scottsigler.com. You may have to scroll down the page a little. Look for the picture of Ruth. Look for the guest goods. Give that a listen and see if you enjoy it. Now I will leave you with a promo for forumgames.com. And until then, I will talk to you all real soon.
Damn, the story's over. Now I'm bored.
Well, never fear. A solution is here. ForumGaming.com.
ForumGaming.com? What's that all about?
Forum Games and other off-topic chat. It is like a bunch of friends hanging out.
What type of games are there?
Well, the classic forum games like Last Post Lens and The Game.
Yeah, but are there any new games?
Sure there is. Let's Make the Longest Thread Ever and Movie Bacon. Come on, who doesn't like bacon?
Alright, sounds fun, but I also enjoy role-playing games.
Well, there's also an entire section devoted to forum-based role-playing games.
Nice!
Yeah, we make everything a game. Hell, we even made writing this promo a game.
Okay, but how much will it cost me?
$100 million.
What?
Just kidding. It's all free. Plus, there are no ads either.
Very funny. So how can I find it?
Just go to www.forum-gaming.com. Yep, forum-gaming.com. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go bump some threads.
You have been listening to The MVP, Book 4 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's Alive by the band Lacuna Coil.